her again. "Wrong," he said. "Don't move. Don't move at all. You understand?"
"I understand."
"Good."
He drove back the way he had come, holding the gun on her.
"Always it's this way," she said bitterly. "For even a little justice, we are asked to pay so much. He is your friend, this pig, Halleck?"
"I told you, don't call him that. He's no pig."
"He cursed us," she said.
There was a kind of wondering contempt in her voice.
"Tell him for me, mister, that God cursed us long before him or any of his tribe ever were."
"Save it for the social worker, babe."
She fell silent. A quarter of a mile before the gravel pit where Frank Spurton rested, Ginelli stopped the car.
"Okay, this is far enough. Get out."
"Sure."
She looked at him steadily with those unfathomable eyes.
"But there is one thing you should know, mister. Our paths will cross again. And when they do, I will kill you."
"No," he said. "You won't. Because you owe me your life tonight. And if that ain't enough for you, you ungrateful bitch, you can add in your brother's life last night. You talk, but you still don't understand the way things are, or why you ain't home free on this, or why you ain't never gonna be home free on this until you quit. I got a friend who could fly like a kite if you hooked up some twine to his belt. What have you got? I'll tell you what you got. You got an old man with no nose who put a curse on my friend and then ran away in the night like a hyena." Now she was crying and crying hard. The tears ran down her face in streams.
"Are you saying God is on your side?" she asked him,
her voice so thick the words were almost unintelligible.
"Is that what I hear you saying? You should burn in hell for such blasphemy. Are we hyenas? If we are, it was people like your friend who made us so. My great-grandfather says there are no curses, only mirrors you hold up to the souls of men and women."
"Get out," he said. "We can't talk. We can't even hear each other."
"That's right."
She opened the door and got out. As he pulled away, she screamed,
"Your friend is a pig, and he'll die thin."
"But I don't think you will," Ginelli said.
"What do you mean?" Ginelli looked at his watch. It was after 3 o'clock.
"Tell you in the car," he said. "You've got an appointment at 7 o'clock.
Billy felt that sharp, hollow needle of fear in his belly again.
"With him?" "That's right. Let's go."
As Billy got to his feet, there was another arrhythmic episode, this the longest one yet. He closed his eyes and grasped at his chest, what remained of his chest. Ginelli grabbed him.
"William, are you okay?"
He looked in the mirror and saw Ginelli holding a grotesque sideshow freak in flapping clothes. The arrhythmia passed and was replaced by an even more familiar sensation, that milky, curdled rage that was directed at the old man and at Heidi.
"I'm okay," he said. "Where are we going?"
"Bangor," Ginelli said.
They took the Nova. Both things Ginelli had told him about it were true. It smelled quite strongly of cow manure, and it ate the road between Northeast Harbor and Bangor in great swallows. Ginelli stopped around 4 to pick up a huge basket of steamer clams. They parked at a roadside rest area and divided them, along with a 6-pack of beer. The 2 or 3 family groups at the picnic tables got a look at Billy Halleck and moved as far away as possible. While they ate, Ginelli finished his story. It didn't take long.
"I was back in the John Tree room by 11 o'clock last night," he said. "I could have gotten there quicker, maybe, but I did a few loops and figure eights and turnbacks just to make sure no one was behind me. Once I was in the room, I called New York and sent a fellow out to the telephone I gave the girl the number for.
I told him to take a tape deck and a steno plug with him, the kind of gadget reporters use to do phone interviews. I didn't want to have to rely on hearsay, William, if you can dig that. I told him to call me back with the tape as soon as she hung up. I disinfected the cut she put on me while I waited for the call back. I'm not going to say she had hydrophobia or anything like that, William, but there was so much hate in her, you know.
I know, Billy said, and thought grimly. I really do know. Because I'm gaining. In that one way, I'm gaining.
The call had come at 12:15. Closing his eyes and pressing the fingers of his left hand against his forehead, Gianelli was able to give Billy an almost exact recitation of how the playback had gone. Gianelli's man.
Hello?
Gina Lemke.
Do you work for the man I saw tonight?
Gianelli's man.
Yes, you could say that.
Gina.
Tell him my great-grandfather says...
Gianelli's man. I got a steno plug on this. I mean you are being taped. I will play it back for the man you mentioned. So?
Gina.
You can do that?
Gianelli's man.
Yes.
So you are talking to him now in a way of speaking.
Gina.
All right. My great-grandfather says he will take it off. I tell him he is crazy, worse, that he is wrong, but he is firm. He says there can be no more hurting and no more fear for his people. He will take it off. But he needs to meet with Halleck. He can't take it off unless he does. At 7 o'clock tomorrow evening, my great-grandfather will be in Bangor. There is a park between two streets, Union and Hammond. He will be there, sitting on a bench. He will be alone. So you win, big man. You win, mi helapokloken. Have your pig friend in Fairmont Park, Bangor, tonight at 7.
Gianelli's man. That's all?
Gina.
Yes, except you tell him, I hope his cock turns black and falls off.
Gianelli's man. You're telling him yourself, sister. But you wouldn't be if you knew who you was telling.
Gina.
And fuck you, too.
Gianelli's man.
You should call back here at 2 to see if there's an answer.
Gina.
I'll call.
She hung up, Gianelli said.
He dumped the empty clamshells in a litter basket, came back, and added with no pity at all.
My guy said it sounded like she was crying all the way through it.
Christ Jesus, Billy muttered.
Anyway, I had my guy